Welcome back to the Man Catholic Podcast. I'm Steve Priest.
I'm Thomas Wirtz.
And I'm Brock Martin.
Today we're talking about three ways to live out Advent. This time. Ooh. Fun topic today, guys. Super I know fun. We have three great points, and we're going to kind of share those points, but also talk about how we can live them out on a practical level.
I think episodes like this are awesome. I know we had a lot of feedback on an episode we did last Halloween on how to live liturgically. Guys really seem to appreciate just a little bit of insight. So we got some 3 points, and then we want to share a little bit about what we're each doing in our families to live out the season of Advent. But I think this topic is so apropos because Black Friday, day after Thanksgiving, all of the stores, Santa goes up, Christmas lights are up in the neighborhood, everyone's putting their trees up, and it's like right after Thanksgiving, the culture kind of shifts to, hey, it's Christmas time, the Christmas music is blaring. But the reality is that there's an entire liturgical season before Christmas, and I think it's a very Catholic thing and a very manly thing to intentionally live that out.
Yeah, and it's changed throughout history how Catholics, how the church has invited us to live this season. So we want to talk about a few of those points, three in particular. And like Brock said, what we're doing for Advent and what we're maybe not doing. Because even having this conversation and preparing for it, I realized, man, I forgot about that piece of Advent. Mm-hmm. And I'll maybe use that to transition the first point. What is the heart of the Advent season? What is it supposed to draw us to? And I guess there's really two things.
I think most people, if you ask them what's the purpose of Advent, they'd say, oh, it's to prepare you for Christmas, right? And that is true. Half true.
Half of it.
Actually, I think one of the deeper points we're going to get to today is that liturgically, the readings in the Mass in the first portion of Advent, the first 2 weeks really, are all actually geared towards the second coming of Christ, not the first. So it's not that we're looking back 2,000 years at remembering Jesus being born as a baby. We're actually looking forward to the moment that Jesus will return and he will judge the living and the dead, that he's going to separate the sheep from the goats, and we will be judged. And I actually think that there's a lot of value there. And honestly, in our modern culture, we miss this, right? Again, if you just start looking right to Christmas, there's depth that the church wants us to meditate on that we miss if we don't think about that. If we don't think about these first 2 weeks to stay awake, to stay sober, to be watchful, to know that like a thief in the night, the king is going to return. And so that was, as we were diving into this, there's an element of the first half of Advent is really looking forward to the second coming, not backwards to the first.
I think that's a challenge for us right now, because gosh, the early Christians, it was fresh. They're like, gosh, he's going to come back any second.
Yeah.
Right. And right now it's 2000 years later. We're like,
he didn't mean right away.
Yeah. Or, but even like, you know, they were walking with him, they saw him, or they were just disciples of the disciples. And so for us, it's a good challenge to remember, both parts of Advent are super important for us because we're so far removed from 2000 years ago.
Right.
But that is interesting to think about that the early Christians, it's any day now. And realize it's hard for us to think. It really is any day now.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, right? That's what Scripture tells us is then, now, and maybe 2,000 years from now, right, we ought to be preparing as if it could be any day.
100%.
Will it be? I don't know. No one knows. But we ought to live like that. And Brock, I am terrible in Advent thinking about the second coming.
Me too.
Of Jesus. I'm just awful at that. I am constantly, my mind and my practices, my family, we've gotten really good at preparing our hearts for the coming of Jesus, and we don't listen to Christmas music. We do that cool thing, you know, that Catholics do, that they don't listen to Christmas music until
That's
Christmas.
Not me.
Not us either.
We don't turn on our lights until Advent starts, which was late this year. You know, it was like a week and a half after Thanksgiving, so the whole block had their lights up before us. They were up. They just weren't turned on. I'm sure my block was like, gosh, Steve's a moron. But I'm really bad at thinking about that. In fact, as you were just talking about that right now, Brock, I feel like I, and maybe others out there, kind of tend to think about the end of times, our death, Jesus' second coming, like at Lent and Easter more. Because he died and he rose again, kind of that second coming, you know, that resurrection. And that's kind of where my mind goes there. But you're right, the church, in her brilliance, in her wisdom, wants us thinking about that, even to kick off Advent, about that, where you might even think, well, chronologically, maybe it should be backwards, like the coming of Lord in the flesh, and then the coming of his second coming. It might make sense to flip those, but she actually wants us to say, okay, you already know the story. You already know what's going on. You know that he died. You know that he rose again. We are celebrating right now his birth, his coming into the world. But before we do that, let us remind ourselves about the second coming before we celebrate his birthday, kind of thing. When it's just brilliant.
Yeah, no, I think it is brilliant. And I think it's brilliance on the part of our mother, the church. The Advent season actually starts the church calendar. So it's not like the church calendar starts January 1st. It actually starts with the first Sunday of Advent. And I think that...
Or at his birth. It doesn't start then either. Like it starts in Advent.
Exactly.
Is when the church calendar starts.
The New Year's.
And I do the very last Sunday before Advent is the Feast of Christ the King, where we're meditating and we're thinking about Jesus coming back as King of the universe. And then the New Year starts with the first Sunday of Advent. And for the first 2 weeks, all of the readings are reminding us of this reality that Christ is the King. He's going to return. And I actually think that that actually makes it easier to prepare our hearts to receive him as an infant at Christmas, because there's a depth and a weight of, holy cow, the King of the universe is coming in a manger. I heard a homily one time, and I agree, one of my favorite words in any lexicon is todo poderoso, which is Spanish for almighty. So you say the creed, you know, believe in
God. You say it just God, like the a Father, Mexican almighty. Too, which is awesome.
Todo poderoso. Spanish is not my first language, Steve. Like it is yours. But the reality is that at Christmas, the King of the universe, the Todo Poderoso, becomes muy pequeño.
There he goes, man. He is on a roll. That's, keep going, bro. No, we're with you.
I'll stop there. But I think it helps frame what's actually happening at Christmas when Jesus enters into humanity, takes on human nature and enters into history. It gives it a new light, I think.
It's also, the culmination. Christ came as he was incarnated. So the incarnation happens so that he could die and save us from sin. But that's not the end. The end story is when he finally comes again. And all earth is created anew, right? It's the new heaven, the new earth. And so it makes sense that it's coupled with his coming down as a human nature.
Yeah, divine being.
Fully human.
Takes on a human
divine,
nature.
Right. It makes sense that it's coupled with the second coming. So it just, at first thought, like, crap, I totally forgot about that. We're already playing Christmas carols and put out the manger scene and doing all these things. But a good reminder, and I'm grateful we're talking about this, and I need to pay more attention to the readings during Mass. So, but that gets us to the point of, I think, the second point with the pink candle. Mm-hmm. And the pink, actually rose-colored vestments. That is, if you're familiar with the Advent wreath, that's the third Sunday of Advent, which is called Gaudete Sunday, which is Latin for rejoice. Mm. And what is that all about? Is it like, cool, hey, it's almost Christmas? Kind of, but not really. Basically, it's the transition from the first part of Lent to the second part.
No, I think, Thomas, that Sunday, Gaudete Sunday, is the liturgical changing of the focus, right? We spent the first 2 weeks thinking about Christ, the King of the universe, thinking about him returning as a judge. At that midpoint of Advent, we turn our focus from the second coming back to the first. And I think there is an element of, let's rejoice. Like, this King who is going to come to judge the living and the dead came as a baby to save you. He took on human nature to save you. He entered into time and to space to save you. And that's worth rejoicing. That how great a King and Redeemer we have, that the King of the universe would look at us with that level of value, that level of worth. And I don't know, you see all the stats about what people are struggling with today, the stats on depression, anxiety, suicide, all the rates just skyrocketing. Like, the world needs a lot more of that, a lot more of people thinking about that, that the creator of the universe loves you enough to become a baby, to be born in a manger, to enter into this, what was probably a pretty hard life, right? Like, well, obviously it ended in his brutal murder, but he did it for you. And he would do it again for you. Even if there were no other people on earth, he'd do it again for you. And I just think that is a very weighty reality. And I think that's why the church is saying, let's rejoice this Sunday. And now we're going to start thinking about that. I don't know. I could be off.
You often are, Brock, but I think you're dead on. I think there's beauty in that. And it's fun because it's actually marked visibly. The change in vestment, the Advent wreath specifically calls it out that, hey, it's time now to look to Christ in a different way. like you said, the Christ child, and to start talking about Christmas. And so I think it's fun. I think it's just fun to remember that, right? Because it's so easy to go through some of these things that we're exposed to from our youth and just to not even know why. There's just a pink candle. There just is. Mm-hmm. Why? It's because it's the shift in our focus during this season of Advent. And I just think it's beautiful. And it's a good reminder, Brock, you said it well, to rejoice because Christ did save us from our sins. And he was born as one of us in a simple, humble manger. And yeah, it's super fun. And it's fun. And it's beautiful for us as fathers to try to bring our kids into that, I think, too, to really understand the season in its fullness.
You know, the Advent wreath is actually a great bridge with Protestants. A lot of Protestants will practice the tradition of the Advent wreath. And it's, I mean, according to history, pretty new-ish. It was a practice started in the 16th century with German Lutherans, actually, which is super interesting. And the church kind of adopted it as well and continued to grow that tradition. But I do love how it keeps, it's an active way right in front of us. I don't know. Ours is at the dinner table. I don't know where that kind of became a thing to keep it at the dinner table. But that's where ours is.
That's ours.
And it's just a great daily way. You know, my son loves lighting the candle and it's a big deal. And Thomas, you probably have 5 kids who fight about who gets to light it.
Blow it out.
Yeah, that's good. Your kids are younger than mine. And so it's a great daily way to participate, to remind our hearts and our minds that we are in this process. And I was just reading something actually today about the origins of Advent and this kind of 40-day season that came after Lent. And how it actually started with a lot of sacrifices and fasting as well. And it kind of dwindled down to just the religious were doing it. And, you know, now that kind of faded away. And then the pendulum kind of swung to, is that a word? Swung?
I think it is swung.
Again, Spanish is my first language, so English is hard for me.
Totopoderismo.
It swung the other direction where people would say, oh, I like to add things for Advent. I don't want to sacrifice. And I think that just means they don't like sacrificing. And so I have really leaned into prayer and sacrifice for Advent, that it is a time to double down on our prayer, that if you're not praying every day, that you make that a consistent habit to prepare your heart and your mind, your relationship with the Lord for his coming, but then also to give things up for Advent so that we're in this kind of state of discomfort that when Christmas comes and those sacrifices can go away during that Christmas season, we realize that there's a difference in season. And I think this is a big, big deal that Christians in general and probably Catholics too, that we really stink at celebrating the season of Christmas. It is far too often. I drive down the street the day after Christmas and the Christmas tree is out on the curb. You know, you can tell that people have kind of boxed up Christmas. It's over. And we know that's not true. We've taught, I think, Living Liturgically podcast, maybe a year ago now, we talked about the octave of Christmas and how during the octave of Christmas, every day is just like Christmas. Same with the octave of Easter. We need to live that out. We have got to celebrate the octave better and the Christmas season better, which goes well into January. Mm-hmm. We cannot box up Christmas in our hearts or in our homes the day after Christmas thinking, okay, now it's over.
Yeah, and that's part of what you said at the beginning. Is part of the way to do that is to prepare well and take advantage of Advent. Mm-hmm. And I love what you're talking about with the fasting and stuff, because that was the third point, is Advent actually penitential? And there's a lot of chatter. You guys maybe have heard different takes on it. And so canonically, canon law 1250 states that only Fridays and Lent are technically penitential seasons. So Advent, by that definition.
As for by the church, yeah.
Yes.
Good Friday and Ash Wednesday as
well,
yeah.
Well, that part it of it. So Advent isn't, mm-hmm. quote-unquote, a penitential season.
Correct.
But historically,
It has been
mm-hmm. elements of fasting to prepare. And mm-hmm. we've lost a lot of that because, you know, the church has changed, I think, both canon law and even how we, I don't know about liturgically, I don't know all the history of it. Yep. But I did want to make a comment. Have you guys ever heard of Ember Days at all anyway?
No.
I hadn't really much. I've heard of it, but I didn't know what it is because we don't really practice it.
If it includes building fires, I'm all
it
in.
It should.
It sounds like it should.
So, okay. So Ember Days, I don't know when it started, but it happens. There's 3 Ember Days that happen 4 times a year. So the Ember Days are Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday that fall 4 times a year. The first, well, I guess depending on, we'll go liturgically. The first is after December 13th. So the Wednesday, Friday, Saturday that fall after December 13th are the first set of Ember Days. The next one are after Ash Wednesday. The third set is after Pentecost Sunday. And the fourth set in the fall is after the Exaltation of the Cross, which is in September sometime.
Okay.
So these are typically days of four things. You would do Thanksgiving. That would be a time where you'd think, pray, meditate on just how to be thankful for what the Lord has given you. You would pray for priests traditionally during these Ember Days. You would fast. I think my understanding as I was reading is probably similar to what you would do on an Ash Wednesday, Good Friday, kind of an intense fast. And you'd also give alms. Mm. And so I think that's a neat tradition that it seems as a lot of chatter online, a lot of Catholics are trying to revive that. I think there's beauty in that. Doesn't mean that all Advent you can't give up something.
Yep.
But maybe an idea is those Ember Days, you really dive in deep. And I think that would, December 13th, that's probably going to be between the second and third week of Advent.
Leading up to Gaudete. Mm-hmm.
So a perfect time before you shift then to the pink candle and think of the rejoicing. So anyways, it was really cool. A lot of beautiful history the church has. And I think some of us, the challenges for some of us is to look back, not in an archaic way, but in a way that appreciates the beauty of our traditions and to see what makes sense for us to bring some of these back.
Totally.
Obviously, be obedient to Mother Church. If she says do it, do it. But if she gives us the choice, it's good for us to kind of challenge ourselves on and look at some of these things and how we can revive the beauty of it to transform our soul, our family, and our culture.
No, and while you mentioned canon law, even though they're not going to say that Advent is a penitential season, I think what Steve is mentioning and what you're saying with the Ember Days, it points to a deeper reality about the human person, which is that feasting only makes sense in light of fasting.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were constantly feasting, there's no feast, right? There's nothing special about the feast. And so in order to feast well, you have to fast. And so I do think that there are elements, and I invite you guys to think through whether it is prayer, fasting, alms. Those are kind of traditionally the big three in Lent that we're asked to really double down on. But I do think if there's elements of let what's happening in the readings inform your quiet time, even if it's 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes in the morning or before you go to bed, to think about that, to be thankful, to think about the way that God has blessed you. And I love, Thomas, that you said that part of the tradition of the Ember Days is to pray for priests.
Mm-hmm.
Our priests need our prayers desperately. This is a crazy world. And a lot of people in the world hate what is happening in Catholicism and the Catholic Church. And so I think it's an opportunity for us to really enter into the fasting and the prayer so that we can enjoy the feast of Christmas more fully.
I think it was G.K. Chesterton that said something like, the way we can appreciate the gift of beer and Burgundy is to not drink too much of it. I think it goes along those lines of if we're constantly indulging, there is no such thing as feasting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I love it.
Thomas, give us a summary on those three points one more time.
What is Advent? It's a time to do two things, to reflect on the second coming of Christ first and then the coming of our Lord in flesh. The second was the point of Gaudete Sunday. It's that shift in those emphases of the two comings of Christ and to rejoice. And then the third is it's not canonically considered a penitential season, but traditionally that has often been a theme that we do offer some fasting to prepare our hearts well for the coming of Christ.
What do you guys do in your families?
Yes.
I know you said that this is a particular time of really entering into prayer and fasting.
Yeah.
Thomas, I know you shared a couple things. I got a couple things that our family is doing. What do you guys do during Advent that's different or unique?
Yeah, so it really starts with the Christmas decorations that we refuse to put up anything that resembles Christmas until the first Sunday of Advent. And so the Christmas tree doesn't go up. The lights on the house don't get turned on. Decorations don't go up till that first Sunday of Advent, which brings us completely into that season. And so a group of us, family, friends, Thomas was there and his family went and got our Christmas tree out of the woods, went and cut that down, which is always an exciting time for us. And then we do very basic decorations during Advent on the Christmas tree. So we just do a string of lights. No ornaments, nothing else until Christmas Eve. That's when we like full-blown decorate the tree.
It is part of that because these trees are tiny like Charlie Brown trees and they can't
they
hold
can't
decorations?
Hold anything? No.
Thin pine trees?
Again, this is like the fifth year in a row where we're in the woods. We're like, oh, it's a little small this year. And then you get it in the house and it's like way bigger than you think it is.
But
outside.
It's funny, the pine trees in Colorado, I don't know. Do you know what the species
thick.
Is?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
They're not
know.
Like it's the blue certain, spruce, yeah. So they're not a lot of branches.
Yeah, yeah, and they're not as strong. But so we put on all the ornaments Christmas Eve before we go to Christmas Eve Mass, and then the star goes up after Christmas Eve Mass.
Love that.
We do the nativity scene, obviously, in the house, and we separate the shepherds. We put them in one place in the house, and the kings, you know, on their way in another part of the house. And yep. Even Mary and Joseph in another part of the house. And so they're all kind of making their way to that manger scene over Advent from their different journeys.
That's what happens in our house, just because the kids take the kids stuff and who knows where the hell it is. Like, where's the donkey, guys? That's in a toilet somewhere, probably. Yeah.
So those are some things that we do.
I wonder if the Advent wreath ended up on dining room tables because it's the safest place to have a candle sometimes. Mm,
that's probably
adult supervision.
Practical. Mm-hmm. No, Steve, our family is very similar. We put up the nativity scene. We typically don't put up the tree until Gaudete Sunday, actually, somewhere around that second half of Advent.
Mm-hmm. Such a purist.
I've heard some people who are purists. This year, we actually put our Christmas tree up before the first Sunday of Advent.
Wow, that's weird.
Whoa. But the reason we did that is because we're leaving for Christmas way before Christmas. And so we made the decision we were going to put up the tree, no decorations. And
what's your address?
As a way to make up for the fact that we're not being very liturgical before our nightly rosary, my kids have to tell us why that's not normal. Why is it okay that we have the tree up before normal? And so literally like every night right now, my kids are
consequence.
Like, yeah, because Jesus is going to come back to judge the living and the dead. And that's normally what we wait for. Another thing we do in addition to the wreath is the Jesse tree. I don't know if
yes,
you guys are familiar with the Jesse tree.
Used
but
to do that. Yeah.
One thing that has been really cool, especially if you have little kids in that elementary school age, is with the Jesse tree, it's these readings that you get to dive into scripture, and it really takes you through salvation history. You dive into the creation of man and the fall of man, and you look at the different covenants that God has extended to his children, and it's been really cool. It sparked some fun conversation. We just last night, we were doing the readings on Isaac, and my kids were, they're like, what the heck? Like, Abraham was really going to, he was going to stab his son. He was going to kill his son. And my kids couldn't comprehend that reality. And so it just led to some, I mean, you know, not typical dinner conversation, but explaining that, no, this is what sacrifices used to be and how amazing that God stopped him and found that he was faithful and then provided the ram for them. So I don't know. The Jesse tree really is, if you want a little bit of a deeper dive into salvation history, some scripture that you can read at the dinner table, that's
been a big
one for us.
And you can get cutouts online and they get to color them and you put one up each day. It's really cool.
I love that. I'm a full on follow the liturgical germ, do what you're supposed to do liturgically. At home, it's interesting. Again, I mentioned the second coming of Christ thing. I don't know. We got to figure out a way to bring that into the family home culture thing. Cause I'm like, look, playing Christmas music, I want us to prepare for Christmas well, but I got to go back and challenge myself here and, you know, figure out what could we do the first part of Advent well. But when we light the Advent wreath and when we say grace, we go right into O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, and we sing it first verse, first week, first and second verse for the 2 weeks, and out of verse each week, which is just beautiful. It's beautiful to sing as a family, and that's just a beautiful Advent hymn. So we do that, and my theory, my kind of take is not to add too many things to get us stressed out, distracted, especially with the younger ones.
Right.
So it's always going to be a constant growth and challenge. Okay, what do we do something else this year? Do we add to it?
Yeah, I like that. Be prudent.
Yeah, but the schedule of the decorations is tough. We didn't get anything up till that first Sunday of Advent. I don't know if that was intentional.
No,
or
it was
just
intentional.
What
I'm sure it was
us.
Intentional. This is probably another podcast, but we don't do Santa Claus. We don't do Elf on the Shelf.
Neither do we.
We have a hybrid.
I have Brock. Brock's still going through his conversion.
My kids do Santa Claus, but Santa Claus is Saint Nicholas. So they like.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. That's
but
cute.
We don't do presents from
neither do we.
Santa.
Neither
but
do we.
Santa came out of Saint Nick.
Yeah. So great. Yeah, we don't do that. And I think it's a distraction. But that's another time and day. Different podcast. One thing I would encourage.
Wait, should we do a Christmas episode that we release
on Christmas? That'd be a good one.
Should you do Santa Claus or not? I think we should.
You're going to have to make your own decision, though, Brock.
Okay.
So the last thing is I would encourage everyone to celebrate the octave of Christmas well. And there's lots of ways to do this. The the best way we've done it is we spread out gifts over the entire octave.
Oh yeah, you guys did
and
this.
And so on Christmas morning, we go down and our son gets one or two on Christmas Day morning, but then every day on the octave is Christmas morning again.
Mr. I mean, Grinch.
He runs down in his pajamas.
Cool.
And,
it is cool.
And it's Christmas morning all over again.
I don't know how
we're opening presents 8 days in
a
row.
Lot of presents.
It's actually, because not everyone of them is huge, right?
Right
so
right.
One is like a card game or one is whatever.
Totally.
So they're not big and expensive, but it's, and I'd rather not get a big and expensive one in order to do this, because I'd rather him understand that Christmas is not a day, it is a season. And that's been the way that we do it. And we just love it. To do that as
practical note this year, Christmas Eve is on a Sunday.
Yeah, this is a good note.
So
make.
If mm-hmm. you go to Christmas Eve Mass, you're going Sunday evening, you also have to go for the Sunday, the fourth Sunday of Advent. So you either have to go the morning of Sunday or the vigil on Saturday night for your Sunday Mass. Does
so
that
the
make
fourth,
sense?
The fourth Sunday of Advent is Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
So you
Christmas
have to,
Sunday.
If you go to Mass Sunday morning, you have to go again Sunday night or Monday morning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Or Saturday night, Sunday night, which is probably what we'll do. But yeah.
Saturday night, you'd be doing the Sunday vigil, and then Sunday night, you'd be doing the Christmas vigil.
Yeah, yep. I think that's what we're going to do too.
I love it. Thanks for calling that out.
Good call out. Yeah. All right, guys, that is it for today and how to prepare for Advent. And that's it for the Man Catholic Podcast. We'll catch you next time. God bless.